How would you like to engineer your life for high performance and discipline? JD Tremblay will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about JD is he's an integrated engineer, ultra endurance athlete, certified naturopath, practitioner, and director of high performance and mental resilience at Hungry Warrior Academy. And he applies engineering principles to human biology and behavior to help individuals build resilience, optimize health, and perform with clarity under pressure, drawing from his experience completing the Epic Deca, which he will tell us what that is. So JD, tell us about how can someone engineer their life for high performance and discipline. What's your blueprint for making it happen?
Your podcast with Lily Patashko shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever. Shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.
Yeah, I'm glad that we get to chat about that, Lily. At the Hungry Warrior Academy, we use a principle called the DECA system. And the DECA system is based on the Epic DECA. So I'm one of three people in the entire world that did the Epic DECA. And it's 10 Ironmen in 10 days on 6 different Hawaiian islands. So a humongous feat that I would say a lot of people can complete if they have the DECA system. And the DECA system stands for an acronym, which is D for discipline. You must be disciplined in everything that you do. You must have E, the energy regulation, and you must understand how you're managing all of your energy throughout the day. C is the capacity, which are you even able to complete that feat? Did you even prepare for it? And A is for action, because so many people are just talking about it, but are they really putting actions behind their words?
Thank you. So tell me what you mean by integrated engineer. What do you mean by that in the context of human performance? Do you apply engineering principles into human performance?
Correct. We do. At Awana, one of our center, we use these machines to optimize performance and understand the human body. However, for everyday people, if they want to apply it in their daily life without going through the financial burdens or all of the time coming to one of our center, they can start in looking at the basics. And when you look at the basics, then you can apply these principles to your life. And for example, for me, we look at the scientific method. For the scientific method, the first step is planning, then strategizing, then also creating a prototype. And then at the end, then you implement it. So when you take this very basic principle, you can apply it to your daily life, where you can take a person going to do a 5-kilometer run. For me, I used it for all of my ultra endurance events. For example, I planned, I said, I want to do an Epic Deca. I'm going to strategize. And then I broke down every single step while making strategic decisions on it. And then I made prototypes. So I built a bike for the specific task that I was going to do. And then I implemented it. So again, we can do this regularly with every task that we're doing.
Thank you. Tell us more about the discipline. How does someone gain the discipline to actually do like a superhuman kind of act, whether it means bringing themselves to perform physically or bringing themselves to perform, you know, let's say at work? Like, how do they get that discipline?
The discipline comes from looking at the basics, not overcomplicating things. We often hear on social media about hormonal imbalance, and then people are talking about all sorts of neurotransmitters and all of these fancy words that are, do we really need all of them? Or can we just look at the basics And then once you can look at the basics and master it, then you're able to build on that. For example, we use the acronym BRAIN in our framework. And when you look at BRAIN, the B stands for baseline. The baseline is what is everything that starts with the baseline? The regulation of your sleep, all of your systems. Everybody can just look at their sleeps. How much sleep are you taking in? That's a baseline, right? You should look at that at first. Your sleep is the most important part. So create a baseline as to what you want to achieve so that now your understanding of your systems. R is for rewiring patterns. When you're able to understand the patterns, for example, some people have difficulty with, and I know I have that problem, when I pass by a fridge, I get really hungry. I eat a lot. I go to a restaurant and it's hard for me to only order one meal. I order sometimes two meals. But again, if I look at the patterns, I understand that in order for me to afford having a body and also eat, I must train a lot more. So my output is much larger than my input. So A is for awareness. Are you even aware? Aware of your surrounding, aware of the people that are in your life, aware of the type of food that you're putting in your system. Then you got the I, which is for input. What are you even putting in it? So it's not just being aware of what you're putting in, but also counting it or sometimes getting all the information that is about the food or about the people that are around you. So for example, you might have people in your life that are not conducive to your end goal. For me, when I wrote my book, Hunger for More in Life, I talked to one of my friends, Brian. One of my good friends, but at that time, he was not conducive to me writing a book. I told him, for the time being, I will block you. And then once I released the book, I paid for him to come to Texas when we released the book. And I think, in my opinion, not just they're all important, but N is nervous system regulation, which in my mind is the most important because a lot of people have difficulty with that. We're talking about how you regulate your nervous system. So many people are consuming an excessive amount of information right now without looking at how to regulate their nervous system. And that's an overload on their part. And to be able to, we had to put it in one of the category by itself, definitely with the nervous system.
Thank you. Are you saying that, for example, you sleeping at the right time makes you disciplined? What about if you actually have a problem with going to bed at the right time? Like, how do you get yourself to do that? Because there's some things that are like almost like a chain reaction. If you don't do this, you're not going to be able to get that and so on.
Well, this can become a mineral imbalance in your system. This can become, but at least if you're looking at the BRAIN acronym and we're going through it, you're looking at not a specific aspect, but just the sleeping part is baseline. Well, what is your baseline? Do you even have a time that you can go to bed? For some people, it's fine. They don't have a set timeline. But for the majority of the people, they're able to go to bed at 8, 9 o'clock. They just choose to not go to bed at 8, 9 o'clock. Or so then you can look at the rewiring patterns. So what is your pattern? Well, if my pattern is, as soon as I'm going to bed, I pick up my phone. And then I start watching content. Then you can remove the content from your life, right? For the time being, maybe 1 hour, 2 hours prior to going to bed. Are you aware of your surrounding, of your patterns? If you are aware of it, then you're able to taking the input. So for example, the curtains, are they completely blacked out? What type of, and then nervous system regulation, obviously you would have it because you're trying to go to bed, but now, since you're aware, you have a baseline, you understand your surroundings, then you are able to go to bed at a specific time. You are able to not look at screens before going to bed. And then sometimes it's as simple as closing your eyes, closing your eyes and waiting for yourself to fall asleep. It doesn't have to be completely fancy. It has to be very, very basic.
Thank you. Tell us about what impacts your energy and how can someone get more energy when they feel like they have none?
So a lot of energy production is done chemically, and that's what a lot of people are relying on, such as those energy drinks. Some people are numbing their nervous system by taking in caffeine or even excessive amounts of caffeine. But again, if you look at the brain, and I know that it seems redundant and basic, but if we go through this mental game again and again, it will drive it in the brain of people to just go through the acronym with everything that they do. It doesn't have to be complicated. Do you have a baseline of energy that you want to achieve? And that, do you have even a baseline of energy that you have? If every day you wake up and you're completely exhausted, then definitely it's your sleep. So then you don't have enough sleep or your quality of your sleep. So then you look at the baseline. Right now, maybe there are some watches. For me, that's what I use. I have a watch that tells me my body battery. So if I wake up and my body battery is at 40, which is on a scale of 0 all the way to 100, 100 being that you are fully rested, then if I wake up at a body battery of 40, then I know that my sleep wasn't optimal. And then I can create that baseline saying, well, now I'm at 40. Now, where do I want to get? And then you rewire those patterns and then you change that based on the desired output. So in order to have more energy, you're not getting it from a chemical source or numbing your system to get the energy. What you are doing is you are just rewiring your patterns, and it can be as simple as, instead of, when you look at your system, sometimes some people, they see trying to have more energy when instead of taking in caffeine and trying to get better, because it's not about pushing harder. Sometimes it's about recovering better. So sometimes it can be as simple as a nap during the day. Like 12 minutes will go a long way instead of taking in caffeine. And I know that the coffee industry might not like what I'm about to say, what I'm about to say about that, but it is how the people used to do it before the caffeine industry just took over everybody by storm. So just by regulating your nervous system, then you will have a bit more energy, and then you will be able to be aware of how you spend your energy.
Thank you. What else can people do to optimize their energy? Let's say they had a good sleep. Is that enough, or what else do they need to do? Is it a diet? Is it like drinking certain things? Are there any particular tools to use? Any tools to use to kind of get your energy up?
Tech tools to get your energy up. Many people use electrodes. Many people use certain tools to stimulate the vagus nerve to relax so that you can have more energy. Instead of going too much into tech savvy, focus on, again, the basic of energy. if you are able to have self-control on how much you eat and how much, what is your input and what is your output, then you will already have more energy. So for example, we talked about food. Well, food, there are some food that will hurt your system. So if you know that this type of food hurts your system, then if you are aware as to what is causing it and where you want to go, then it's going to change your energy level. During the Epic Deca, for me, I switched to a vegan diet because I understood that my body could not and should not be digesting a lot of food during the event because it was a multi-day event. We're talking 10 days. So what I did was I switched to a vegan diet, and it went through my system very quickly. And because of that, I was able to perform at a higher level. Now, once the Epic Deca was over, I kept going for some time with the vegan diet because I was racing multi-day event. But eventually, my system wasn't assimilating all of the food that I was taking. So what happened is I had to switch back and revert back to a normal diet. So it's not so much about the diet, but to eat for a purpose. So what is your purpose? If you are eating for that purpose, like ultra endurance event, multi-days, for me, veganism felt right and was the right tool because I completed it. But for other people, then it might not work for their lifestyle. So pick something to eat based on your lifestyle and mainly how your body responds. And that way you're able to utilize to your full capacity your body.
Thank you. What about people who are speakers? For example, when I organize a workshop that tends to last 26 hours, it tends to be like 13 hours on Saturday, 13 hours on Sunday, and there's very few breaks. Like I would say, there's really no breaks apart from like a half an hour lunch break. I find that, for example, it's easier for me not to eat. I think partially because I'm nervous. And secondly, I also find easier not to eat because then I don't have to like worry about digesting and this kind of thing. And so mm-hmm. I'm wondering, what would you suggest for a speaker like me who needs to do like a 13-hour teaching day in terms of performing the best possible? And what would I be eating? Is it like mainly protein or mainly like vegetables? What would you recommend?
Because you are speaking, dairy is something that I would avoid just before the speaking engagement. And that's because dairy creates some form of coating on the vocal cords. And so you are to, when you speak, it will come out more on a sticky part. And so very often it's like drinking milk. When you drink milk, you have almost this film in your throat that just all is like sticky, and then you have difficulty speaking. So I would avoid dairy just for that reason, because this would be a speaking engagement. For a speaking engagement, I would recommend, because it's long lasting, I would recommend protein and fat, but that is quickly absorbed by your system. So for example, an egg, or if you have bone broth, so it's still giving you, or maybe an avocado. So again, healthy fats, which will last for a long time in your system and give you the energy, but without giving you the spike that you're looking for in terms of energy. If you are a speaker, carbs, very often at guest speaking engagements, they are there anyway, like donuts and cakes. And a lot of people just don't have the self-control. And what they're looking for, their body is just craving a little bit of sugar. So if it is for a long event and you're just looking for that spike of energy, and you're just feeling a bit drowsy, then there are these packs that they sell them. I'm not going to recommend a specific brand, but there are these packs that are for runners or sometimes for diabetic, and it's just sugar because your body is craving the sugar. It's craving the carbs, and all you're looking for is just a quick energy, and then you just want to perform. Then the runners, that's what they're looking at taking. But you're using the energy, you're using that energy quite rapidly because you're on stage and it's quite stressful. So you have long-term energy with the protein and the fats, but you're also having the quick energy and you're only taking it when you need it. The problem is when all of those cakes and all of those on the table, all of those carbs look quite appealing because your body wants the energy, but when you intake, say, a cake or a muffin, you're taking in something that your body does not need. He wants the sugar, he wants the carbohydrates, so he wants to have quick energy, but you're taking in all of the fats that are attached to that carbs. So that's where people are gaining fat, and then there is the aspect where they're not using the carbs. So that's where now you become even more drowsy and even more, like you want to sleep even more. And then during the day, I would not consume too much fat and protein because otherwise, such as, let's say, bacon in the middle of a day, because then you will feel even more tired.
Thank you. How does the diet of someone who wants to have sustainable energy vary versus, let's say, what you would have on the actual day that you have to perform? Is there any particular type of food that you recommend for people to kind of build almost like a momentum of energy so that they do perform extremely well on the day that they have to perform the most important event?
I would say eat for a purpose, because a person that is lifting a car will not be eating the same as a person like me. We might be eating the same caloric intake, but our input of what we consume is completely different. So I would say eat for a purpose. For a person that, for generally what happened, is people, if they are going into an event that requires the in or the output that is quite rapidly, and their body will consume energy very quickly, then to go with carbs. But that carbs is rapidly taking in, but not giving you a sustainable energy. So I know that your question was more about sustainable energy. And then that's when it becomes a crucial in ultra endurance. For me, I'm taking in between 60 to 90 grams of carbs or just pure sugar every hour when I'm cycling and swimming and running. But for someone who's doing a guest speaking, I would not recommend 60 to 90 grams of carbs every hour. that would put way too much stress on their organs.
Thank you. What I normally do, actually, and I know that is really bad, is I would probably have four lattes in particular, and and I don't normally have Coca-Cola, for example, but for example, right now it's like 3:27 in the morning here, and I had Coca-Cola, and I feel still very kind of alive, you know, even though it's kind of hard after like 2 a.m. I'm kind of like getting a bit like a zombie. But because today I had Coca-Cola, I feel kind of still, you know, upbeat and everything. And the other thing that I find brings my energy quite up is dancing. Especially like super energetic dance music. And the other thing that brings my energy up is the sun. So if I'm like walking in the sun for like 20 minutes, half an hour, then I feel like powered up, almost like a battery. And tell me what you think about my diet for when I'm...
So lattes is a lot of milk. So again, I would look at maybe changing it to, I would switch it to maybe a tea. There are some sweeteners with some teas. If you like really latte, I would switch up to maybe there are coconut milk or other types of lattes that you can have that are without the dairy component, which would not affect your speaking. The caffeine, I would look at probably reducing it if your latte contains any form of caffeine. I would look at maybe the amount that you're taking in. So you don't need four of them. That would be an excess. One might do the trick. And if we look at the way that caffeine operates, it only numbs your neurotransmitters to say to your system that you are tired. So taking it in the morning is not necessary. If say you go with maybe a tea in the morning and then maybe a latte later on, then that would be something I would recommend. In terms of, well, you mentioned the direct brand Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola has a lot of sugar. And there are some studies that show that they did not remove certain compounds from their recipe, which could affect the brain. So that is just an excessive amount of sugar. And again, see, that sugar can be taken in by other means. So the way that the body operate, say we look at when we were gatherer hunters, to get the hunt, it would take a long time. So we would go by a bush, grab some berries. It would give us some quick energy, and that quick energy is used to go and hunt for an animal or hunt for something that is more with long-lasting energy. So in terms of the Coca-Cola, you feel driven, and it's not just a feeling, it's the sensation of it, and you might be better to taking in some of these. I know they cost a bit more, but some of these packets of sugar, and when you really, really need it, then you take in sugar. But I would go with a little bit of sugar. Even you can go with honey and do dance music. And you would most likely get more from getting a little bit of honey and dance music than you would with Coca-Cola. Because Coca-Cola will just spike your blood sugar level. And then you will have difficulty sleeping afterward, which again destroys your sleeping pattern, which if it destroys your sleeping pattern, now you're destroying multiple days. If it's 3 a.m. and you just took in a Coca-Cola, then you're destroying the next day definitely, because now you're not waking up at the proper time. So even if you have a difficult schedule and you have to wake up at 3 a.m, I would sleep a bit before, rest, no screen time, and then right before, say, a podcast, you go with honey, and then you go with dance music. Then I can even add another one. If you're close to a shower or you are at home and you are close to some cold water, if you're not close to cold water, you can do it with a bowl, and then you put some ice in it, very, very cold water, and then you plunge your face in it for 30 seconds. And then what it will happen is we will spike your cortisol level. If it's spiking your cortisol level, it generates a fight or flight response. If you're, say, close to a shower, then you can do it in the shower. If you have access to a cold plunge, obviously it's the best. But if you don't, then you turn it to a really cold, you go in the shower, it's very, very cold. It will spike your cortisol level, which will create that stress hormone that rushes through your system. And now you will be in fight or flight response, which is exactly the same response as or similar response that Coca-Cola would give you. Because again, it's fighting. So now you get the honey and then you get the dents. And now you have this form of ritual where you are operating at peak performance because you're generating an artificial way of fight or flight response. That's what you're doing. Like there's no tiger, there's nobody attacking you, but you're doing it in a way that requires you because that dance music is a frequency. That's why I tell people to stay away from certain types of music, such as rap music. Rap music is a type of music that is made to harm your brain. And it's not conducive to, there's nothing about that is healthy about that. But for dance music, it's meant to activate your system and help you open up and be free. And gives you that energy. So again, certain types of frequency are conducive and others are harmful. But so that would be my rundown of waking up and being at your full active performance at 3 a.m.
Thank you. Tell us more about the frequency of music that can actually reduce some of your energy. What kind of music you said? Rap music is harmful?
Well, different types of music activate different brain waves, and these brain waves are all attached to how your body will react. So, for example, the delta waves, it's been shown to be for deep sleep. So if you have a frequency that activates delta waves, then you will be sleeping much better. So if you are in an environment where you have a lot of cars and it's very loud and you are in a city, maybe sometimes just taking in your phone, putting it on another, on the other side of the room so you don't get that lack of control or self-control to grab your phone and go on social media and spike your nervous system, and you put it at a certain frequency. And there are these ones that are about calming the nervous system down. You can just put your phone on that frequency, and you can find them for free, YouTube, and that's it. That's for delta. But then again, you have different frequency. The main five are delta, theta, alpha, beta, and gamma, and they all activate different parts of your system. To be in a state of mind that is completely different. So that's why nowadays these frequencies, they harm people, is because we put in the wrong frequency at the wrong time. You're trying to go to bed, but you really like dance music. Then you put dance music right before going to bed. There's no way you're going to bed with dance music unless you are completely exhausted. So that's
thank you. So for people that generally have to work at night, like they work at night every single night for, let's say, 12 hours, what can mm-hmm. they do to preserve their energy and to make the most of the energy they can possibly create so they can perform in any area of their lives at the best of the possibility, considering they have to work nights?
If they have to work nights, their baseline, based on the brain acronym, their baseline is that they will operate at night. There are people that work in shift. You try to have, to the best of your ability, the same shift every week. That's what I would recommend, because once your body understands that pattern, you can recognize what you're going to input into your system. And then your cravings will come, especially when you are working shift and it's fluctuating. But if you have to work at night, then I would recommend definitely to get some curtains that are completely blacked out, that will black out your room, because you will have to sleep during the day. And it's not under the sun that you should be sleeping. So to that your system understand when to shut down and when to be up is a pattern that you need to be recognizing and making it a baseline. And hopefully you can make it that it's a routine if you can be.
Thank you. Tell us about magnifying your capacity for endurance and for performing the best that you possibly can. Because I remember when I was a lot younger, I used to dance 18 hours per week. So like 6 hours, three times a week. And I was also like doing a lot of ironing. I was cleaning houses. I was like an au pair and a nanny. And I was walking, I would say, maybe at least an hour and a half every day, taking the kids to school. So, I mean, I was ultra active, okay? And then when I kind of gradually stopped dancing because I started feeling a little bit unwell, then my stamina sort of reduced. Like, I remember when I was a lot younger, I was like going up the stairs in the elevator on the tube, on the metro. And then all of a sudden, it was a lot harder to do that. And my stamina reduced, and I wasn't, and when I started dancing again, I would say a year ago and so on, I was not able to dance more than, let's say, three dances at a time, at a maximum, like one generally. So it's just like my habits just gradually reduced. So like, how does someone build their stamina and their energy back up if they don't have now the capacity to do it because of perhaps poor habits, lack of training?
So, well, discipline, that's what I love about discipline. It's completely irrelevant from motivation. A lot of people talk about motivation, and there are these motivational ways to get there. And motivation should be used as a tool, but discipline should be the main driver. So, where do you want to go and how do you want to get there should be at the forefront of it, not just some form of motivation. I don't know the specific situation, but if I had to take a wild guess, you overdid it and you burned yourself out based on poor habits. And what you have to do is understand, I did the best with what I had. And now what I will do is I will regulate my nervous system and make those changes now that I know better. If you can do this, there's a thing called muscle memory. And that's also working for the brain. As soon as you restart, say, dancing or doing, as soon as you restart doing it, your body will automatically remember it. What happens in most cases is that we burn ourselves out, sometimes based on poor habits. And when we burn ourselves out, we don't have the motivation of doing it. And then it's hurting. It's very painful. And to be fair, it's very painful for a lot of people, even me, when I did the Epic Deca. I did a lot of ultra endurance event, and then I stopped for a while. I completely stopped. I started eating, and I remember my kid was calling me fat, and I wasn't completely fat, but I was not as fit as he remembered me and when I was in the Epic Deca. However, restarting, and that's where the key point is, restarting that first day of going and putting my shoes on and going out was just painful putting on my shoes. Not in terms of the physical pain, but in terms of the mental pain of going through the motion all over again. And then I understood that there are other people that are watching me, not just on social media, but my son is also watching me. I don't want him to remember me as the person that gave up, let go, that just quit and just let myself go because of pain. And I understood one factor also is that there will be pain whether I sit on the couch and do nothing or if I go out and do something about it. There's going to be pain regardless. So I had to choose my pain, and making that decision really transformed my mindset. I said, I'm going to be disciplined. It's going to be painful if I'm on the couch and eating chips. And I love these parts, but it's also going to be painful if I am going outside and doing something about it. So I had to pick. I chose to remain healthy, and it's not as easy as we make it look like on social media. We make it look like, and I know that some people, they look at my social media and they say, well, this guy's always training. He's always, very often, I don't want to train Lily. I wake up in the morning going for this run or this bike ride, going for a swim in a cold environment. And it's not fun. There's a lot of times where jumping in a cold lake or jumping in a cold tub because you want to achieve an event, to me, it's painful. So it's not going to happen overnight. You must pick whatever you think is painful, because it will be painful to not be able to spend time with your kids. It's going to be painful if you go to the doctor too often. It's going to be painful. Or it's also going to be painful if you restart dancing, if you restart being your joyful self, if you be an inspiration for others. It's going to be painful. Some people are not even going to like your transformation. Some people are not even going to like you at all. And so it's going to be painful on both sides. It's up to you to pick what pain you want to have. Do you want the pain of the unhealthy parts or the pain of the healthy parts? And there is a choice to be made. So it's not about motivation. It's about discipline. I chose the painful part of having some muscle soreness throughout my body because I decided I'm going to go for a run. And now I still today I'm pushing 40. And last year I ran the entire circumference of the capital of Kenya. I ran against Kenyans. I swam last year. We ran I swam between two provinces. I swam for 7.5 hours nonstop with cold water. And I did it. Again, we did it for the impact. But I chose that pain. It was painful, but I chose that pain because that's the type of lifestyle I want to have. I want to have an impact on people. I want to be able to inspire other people. And it doesn't have to be that you're running an entire country or swimming an entire continent. It can just be that you are a motivational person, an impactful person in your household, an impactful person for maybe that one girl that, because there are these little girls that want to dance and are living with the same mental barriers that you live in. There are these little girls that say, oh, it's painful when I'm dancing. I don't want to dance anymore. And now they see you dancing. And then they say, well, if she can, then I can. And so you just impacted the life of some other being that wants to grow in their life because you overcame these mental challenges, these mental barriers. So that's what I have to say about that.
Thank you. For me, it was actually the illness, because I had a lot of sore throat and cough and migraine. And every time I went swimming, every time I went dancing, I had more pain. And that's the reason why I stopped. And not that I didn't want to go. I really wanted to go, but I just couldn't handle the pain of actually getting the migraine, you know, so that was why. But now I feel a lot better. But somehow yeah. I don't seem to have the same, the same stamina kind of.
Same drive.
But I do, yes, but I do. I mean, I do dance at home. And let's say I have been to a few clubs in September in Dubai, and I can dance for 2 hours nonstop now. Mm-hmm. And so I built my stamina up again. But I still haven't kind of reached the level of where I was at years ago. And I'm not sure if that means I should like lower my standards a little bit. But what I was going to say is that...
Well, sometimes it's based on, see, your metabolism changes over the years and it decreases. And sometimes it's about maybe adding electrolytes to your dancing, where a lot of people think that sodium is bad. But when you look at the amount of sweat that would come out of your system when you're dancing, instead of taking in alcohol when you're dancing, which is a carb and it's going to dehydrate your body, to maybe they have those tablets of electrolytes, and adding some form of sodium would get you to last much longer on the dance floor. So I understand that telling someone to eat more sodium is contradictory to a lot of medical advice. But if you are using that energy properly, which this is only with an electrical charge, that's what the sodium does. It gives you more energy for a longer period of time, because what you're doing is you're retaining that water in your system. You're not just sweating it out when you're dancing, because I'm assuming you're not just dancing. You're going all out when you're dancing. You're having fun and there is going to be sweat. So therefore, sometime adding a tablet to your drink that will have some electrolytes to it, will give you that long lasting energy. And for me, I eat, we calculate about a minimum of 1,000 milligram of sodium per hour when I do an event. And that's the minimum. That's my minimum, which again, if I gave that to anybody else, they would end up with high blood pressure and probably die within 2 weeks if that was the case. But because I'm sweating so much, I need to retain all these liquids. And so that's what I would go with. And some of them are not that, that expensive. I use Precision Fuel and Hydration. That's the one I use, because they only have just electrolytes. And then if you want sugar, then it's just sugar. So that's why I went with this company. But there are multiple other out there and that you might find. But sometimes it's just a little electrolyte mix. And many people think that sodium is bad because they've been told you're going to have high blood pressure. But if you're sweating and you're using it, the electrolytes are your friends.
Thank you. I was going to add just that... The thing that I find quite interesting is that it can take 5 years to take a decision to engineer your life for high performance and discipline. But the minute you really take a decision that you want to stick with, then I find it easy. Like, it could be raining. It could be like anything. If you've made a decision that you have some non-negotiable things that you are going to do and you live by them, it's like discipline is easy. Because, for example, like I promised myself I was going to go dancing 3 times a week. I was going to swim 3 times a week. I was going to do, tennis once a week. And while I had that in my diary, I was like doing that every single week without any problem, even if I was tired. And I think that's one of the keys of engineering your life for high performance and discipline as well, like making that decision. But the question is like, how do you get to that decision faster? So you're not waiting 5 years.
Well, it's to know what are your values and where do you want to go. Making it clear about the person that you want to become, and then having faith to step into that that line of work or it's getting over that just the hump of faith is already difficult as it is. So making the little initial steps, these baby steps, but really by creating at the very beginning, you should have an idea of the person, of the type of woman or man that you want to become. And then once you have an idea of the person that you want to become, the path becomes more clear as it goes. You don't have to figure it all out. You just have to say, this is the type of body I want to have. These are the types of relationship I want to have. This is the type of life I want to have. If you want to be, and it's perfectly acceptable. If you want to be someone who makes $50,000 a year, if you want to be making a six figure, that's also fine. There are these people that are living very comfortably with these types of income in certain countries. So maybe it's changing your environment. And if you're, I want to make that amount of money and then you want to go even higher, then that's up to you. But you have to figure out what you want to become before you even embark on a journey and see if you have the capacity. Hence why we talked about the DECA system. And in the DECA system, do you have the capacity? For me, I can dance, but I'm not going to be a dancer. I'm not going to go out for 3-4 hours and go dancing. There's no way, right? This is not part of my capacity. I will not be indulging in dancing for hours. That is not, but for running, I can run countries. I have no problem with it. Right? There's no problem. Swimming, there's no problem. Cycling, no problem. But again, my capacity is built on endurance event and triathlon, as opposed to for you, you're probably an ultra endurance athlete in terms of dancing. That's what you're good at. So making that decision, I agree with you. Definitely these non-negotiables, building that person that you want to become helps you have the clear vision of what you want to achieve. And then you make baby steps every single day to achieve that. And then eventually you reach that stage or you don't, but at least you're going to die trying.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
They can go to hungrywarrioracademy.com and they can learn all about what we're doing. My most passionate part is our philanthropic side, where we're helping thousands of children in over 4 different countries. And so it's not just a business where we are making some profit, but the profit goes also a long way for these children.
Thank you.
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health changemakers to live your healthiest life ever.